Saturday, March 20th. The next morning saw a bustle of activity after breakfast, as most of the visitors prepared to leave and just about everyone else got ready to see them off at the station. In the foyer of Tenzin's house, Utena, by now feeling like an old hand, was getting Annabelle prepped for the field while Corwin sorted out the travel kit. They were in a slight hurry, as there was a ferry to catch, but everything appeared to be going smoothly, and there was no cause for concern. "Where'd Anthy get off to?" Utena wondered, looking around. "We can't wander too far without her, now can we?" she inquired of Annabelle. At that moment, Anthy appeared on the landing at the top of the stairs overlooking the entryway, dressed for the excursion in her borrowed air acolyte clothes again. "Corwin, would you come up here for a moment, please?" she asked, smiling. "I need your help with something." Corwin glanced in faint puzzlement at Utena, who shrugged. There wasn't anything up there as far as either of them knew. They hadn't used any of the upstairs rooms apart from stealing the futon daybed out of one. But neither was inclined to argue, so Corwin said only, "Sure, be right there," then zipped up the bag, put it next to Utena, and trotted up the stairs. By the time he got up there, Anthy had turned and now led the way up the hall into one of the side rooms. More puzzled than ever, Corwin followed her inside. It was the room they'd taken the futon from, and now lacked anything much in the way of furniture. "He began. But before he could finish the question, she had turned, shut the door, and then backed him up against the inside of it, kissing him with a sudden, unaccustomed ferocity that brought Titan instantly to his mind. "Oh, hello," he remarked quietly when, at length, she partly relinquished him, her hands still framing the sides of his face. "Do you remember?" Anthy asked a trifle breathlessly. "When I said, 'This is only for today?'" "Yes," Corwin replied, arching an eyebrow. Anthy gazed into his eyes for a second, then smiled wryly and said, "I've changed my mind," before setting back to work. They nearly missed the ferry, arriving dockside at a run just before the boat was to sail, and received some deeply skeptical looks from some, and deeply amused ones from others, of their party. But no one said a word as they scrambled aboard, and the boat set off for the mainland. The timetables lined up such that they had 10 minutes or so to kill at Central City Station before the Psycho Limited, doing business as the East Bow Psi Limited until the Vale, departed. Azana and Karana arrived at almost the same time as the party from Air Temple Island, and Master Ito as well, and they had a sort of miniature going-away party on the concourse. "A gift for you, from one pier to another," said Ito. Bowing, he handed Kate a polished wooden case, like a small and unusually ornate fishing tackle box with a cylindrical scroll case attached to the lid. "You will have to find a craftsman to make the table for you," he explained, "but everything else you need to continue your study of Pai Sho is there." Kate smiled and put the box down on top of her suitcase so that she could return his bow properly. "Thank you, Ito-sensei. I shall treasure it." "Health and happiness to you, Master Caitlin, until we meet again," said Ito. Glancing a few yards down the platform to where Azana, just out of earshot, was seeing Anne off, he smiled sentimentally and went on, "Thank you for allowing your student to enrich my granddaughter's life. I believe that in teaching her, Azana has found something she didn't think she was missing." "Well, I guess this is goodbye for now, Juniper," said Azana, who seemed none the worse for her adventure the day before. "Do keep me apprised as your travel plans for the summer solidify. We have a fair number of road games in June, and we'll need to coordinate our timing carefully. Anne nodded. I'll do that. Then, composing herself, she saluted and bowed, saying, Thank you, Azana-sensei, for agreeing to teach me. I've learned so much in just the first week. As have I, Azana replied, returning the salute. Then the elder firebender hugged her, adding in a much less formal tone of voice, Stay safe, Junichan. I hear it's dangerous out in the big universe. It has its moments, Anne conceded, returning the embrace. But so does this place. You watch out for yourself, too. Ah, no worries, Karana said, putting a proprietary hand on her bending partner's shoulder with a grin. With the MLB season starting, she'll be too busy to get any more fights with those assholes from the Agni Kai. And I'll be around to put out any new fires that might start, she added, winking. She hugged the younger girl as well, then trotted off to give her regards to Kate and the Ponds. One more thing before you go, said Azana. So saying, she unslung the small black leather valise she was carrying from her shoulder and offered it to Anne, who took it with a puzzled expression. The books I promised you, Azana explained. There ended up being four, so I thought you would appreciate it if I included something to carry them in, she added, smiling. Anne examined the bag for a moment. It was a soft briefcase with a top flap, like a messenger bag, and was obviously well-traveled. Embossed on the front of the flap was a seal or crest, bearing Tongyu writing she couldn't read. With a smile, she shouldered it opposite her small duffel bag, then bowed again to her teacher. Thank you, she said. I'll try to have read them by the time we see each other again. There won't be a quiz, Azana assured her. Safe travels, Anne. I'll see you in June.
Well, well, look who finally came up for air, said Amy with a grin, a short distance away, as Nal and Lakpa entered the concourse from the street doors and hurried toward them.
As it were, she added playfully. We were beginning to think you weren't coming with us, Rory put in.
Actually, I'm kind of not, said Nal. But I wanted to see you guys off and thank you for coming. I hope you had a good time.
Are you kidding? Amy asked him. We've had the best time. Thanks so much for inviting us.
You're welcome back any time, Cora told her, then grinned. The Air Kids will be talking about you guys for months.
What do you mean you're kind of not going with them? Corwin wondered.
Can we not talk about this right now? Nal replied. It's complicated. Later.
Okay, said Corwin, drawing it out a trifle skeptically. Then he added, Anyway, you probably hadn't heard. We're staying too. Utena, Anthe, and me. And Annabelle and Garnet, obviously. Building a house up in one of the mountains outside the city. Man, you should have seen the place. Rohan and Iki took us up yesterday. You'd like it. It's all dragony up there.
Nal looked somewhere between pleased and awkward, an anomalous expression indeed for him.
That's great, he said, sounding as if he wasn't quite certain of that.
The conductor shouted for all to board the East Bao Sai Limited. With final hugs, kisses, handshakes, and whatever else was warranted, the party separated into two, one boarding the train, the other standing back to watch it depart. As it pulled smoothly away, Rory leaned out a window to call a last bit of medical advice to Anthe, but his message was damaged somewhat by the Republic City Railway Authority's safety regulations.
If she starts to... Don't worry, it's perfectly normal.
I'm always going to wonder now, Utena observed matter-of-factly in the quiet that settled once the train was gone.
Neri watched the train disappear around the bend just beyond the switchyard with a downcast expression, then sat down, raised her nose to the glass and steel latticework above, and uttered a mournful howl. Cora blinked in surprise, looking around, as people paused in their comings and goings to stare in alarm.
"Oh, stop that howling, you big baby," she chided the polar bear dog, reaching up to rub her head. "You'll see him again in the summertime."
She glanced around again, noting the reactions of passers-by, then tugged at Neri's collar and muttered,
"Seriously, Neri, stop it. You're scaring people's children."
Neri subsided grudgingly, rose to her feet, and trudged with Cora and the others, most of them trying, and largely failing, not to laugh, toward the exit.
"Was that your old school bag you just gave the kid?"
Karana asked Azana, near the back of the group, as they left the station.
"Hm?"
Azana replied, as if she hadn't quite heard. Then,
"Yes, I suppose it was."
Karana rolled her eyes and addressed her next remark to the fire ferret on her shoulder.
"Oh, listen to her, Pabu. Yes, I suppose it was," she says, like she hadn't really noticed.
"Well, what?" said Azana. "I could hardly expect her to carry 4 hardcover books back to New Avalon by hand. It's a book bag. That's what it's for."
Karana nodded.
"Mm-hmm." Azana glanced narrowly at her friend.
"Karana?"
"I didn't say nothing," Karana protested, spreading her hands innocently. "Say," said Utina to Corwin, as they emerged from the station, "while we're here, we should go show Kemba your handiwork."
Corwin smiled.
"Indeed we should," he agreed. Kemba welcomed them back to her handicrafts stall in the Railway Square Market like old friends. Once she'd received her hug, Utina touched the necklace Corwin had given her and said with a grin,
"I just wanted to come by and show you. He's done the decent thing at last."
The middle-aged water tribeswoman's eyes widened.
"Ooh, that's some nice work," she declared, then elbowed Utina with a sly smile and added, "He is good with his hands."
Then, as the rest of the group that had come with them laughed, Kemba looked them over, noticed Anthy, took a close look at Annabelle, and then turned a judicious eye to Corwin.
"Uh-oh," thought Utina.
She had been wondering how long it would be before something like this happened. She, Corwin, and Anthy had never been ashamed of their unusual relationship, nor shy about it. They had accepted that it would occasionally dismay people as part of the cost of doing business. Generally speaking, they didn't care if it did, taking such dismay as evidence that the people who were dismayed were people whose opinions they didn't need to value in the first place. Still, it wasn't as though they customarily set out to flaunt it, to throw it in people's faces, and it was always a little awkward and a little painful when someone they liked turned out to be on that list. It was disappointing. Kemba, though, didn't disappoint them after all. After eyeing Corwin for a moment, she grinned and made a sweeping gesture that took in his whole family.
"You must be quite a hunter, handsome, to be worthy of these 3 ladies," she said cheerfully, firing a wink over Anthy's shoulder at Cora, who quirked a smile in return.
Turning to Anthy, she went on, "He hasn't made a necklace for you, either. And here you've borne him such a fine daughter, too." She whacked Corwin theatrically on the shoulder and declared,
"Hopeless!"
Then, ignoring him, she addressed herself directly to Annabelle, leaning toward her with a smile and saying,
"Hello! How old are you, sweetheart?"
They sorted through introductions, at which point Utina Riley pointed out that if anyone should be getting a hard time for failing to make Anthea a necklace, it was herself, not Corwin. After chatting with Kemba for a while longer, the group began to break up.
Azana and Karana had practice to get to, and said their cheerful farewells with promises to be in touch. Utina noticed as they were leaving that Karana, too, was wearing what appeared to be a betrothal necklace, and wondered as to its provenance. She made a mental note to ask Corwin if he knew. Master Ito, too, parted from them at that point, catching a streetcar in the direction of his academy. She took that awfully well, Utina observed as the somewhat reduced company made their way back toward the ferry quay. I was worried for a second that we might be in for a disappointment. Nah, Kemba's seen it all, said Cora with a grin. Besides, deals like yours aren't completely unheard of in the South Pole. Not common, by any means, but most people know someone who knows someone, and so forth. She nudged Utina with an elbow. That was what she meant when she said he must be a good hunter, she explained with a wink. In the old days, that was the only way anybody could support more than one spouse. Hours later, as afternoon drew in toward evening, the East Bao Sai Limited made steadily for Ba Sing Se. In the compartment she shared with Kate, Anne lay in the upper of the two bunks a conductor had appeared to conjure magically out of the bulkhead, and unpacked the bag Azana had given her. There were, as promised, four books inside, all hardcovers, three bound in leather, and one in the kind of old-fashioned cloth binding Anne always associated with antique schoolbooks. She opened that one first, and found stamped on its front flyleaf the same seal that was embossed on the book bag's flap. Below it, someone had written a short message in an angular script. "Sensei?" she said. "Yes?" Caitlin's voice replied from the lower bunk. "You can read Japanese, right?" Anne asked. After a short pause, Kate's head and shoulders appeared next to the upper bunk. "Mm-hmm," she said. "The book itself is in standard," said Anne, turning it so Kate could see it. "But I think this note is Kokugo." Kate's eyes scanned the flyleaf. Then she smiled and said, "Heh, so it is." "What does it say?" asked Anne. "This is Azana's book," Kate translated. "Form 4, Autumn Term, 280 ASC. The stamp above it is the school seal. Piandao Academy, Shujing." Anne blinked and turned the book back to look at the note again. "Huh. Azana's from Shujing. I remember her mentioning it. This must have been one of her schoolbooks." Kate read the spine and laughed again. "Ah, Love in the Time of Space Sword," she said. "A classic. It would be a natural choice for a standard language class. They would have read it in the original Tongyu in a previous year." "Hmm." Anne investigated the other volumes. "These are all by the same author. Where have I heard his name before?" "Sokka? He was also an artist. You saw one of his drawings at the museum." "Oh, the cartoon of Aang! Maybe I'll find out in one of these what the punchline meant," said Anne with a smile. Examining the books further, she giggled. "He had a flair for titles, too. Crazy from the Heat, The Adventures of Snow Savage and Dirt Girl, To Wang Fire, Thanks for Everything, Tai Li." Kate chuckled and returned to her bunk. "Sokka was one of his generation's great wits," she said dryly. After a bit more investigation, Anne put away the other books, rearranged her pillows a bit more comfortably, and settled in for the long haul with Love in the Time of Space Sword. As she opened it, an item fell out from between two of the pages, landing softly on her chest. Closing the book again on her finger, she picked it up and turned it over. It was a color photograph of two girls in their early teens, one pale and raven-haired, the other all in shades of brown, both dressed in natty black and red uniforms with pleated skirts over tights, golden sashes at their slim waists, shoes with slightly upturned pointed toes, and a familiar structure to the shoulders of their single-breasted jackets. School uniforms, as seen through the fashion sensibilities of the Fire Nation. With a mild shock, Anne realized that they were Azana and Karana in their early teens, maybe 9 or 10 years ago. Karana, grinning broadly, had one arm hooked around Azana's neck and was making a V-sign for the camera with the other hand. Her jacket was open and the shirt beneath it undone to the third button, showing just the top edge of what Anne recognized as a sports bra. And she was wearing what looked like the same stylish little choker-style necklace Anne had noticed on her as an adult. Azana, somehow unsurprisingly, fully buttoned up, was glancing at Karana. She looked slightly startled, but there was a little smile playing at her lips. Anne's face wore a similar expression as she regarded the picture. It appeared Azana hadn't been expecting to get glomped like that when whoever had taken the picture produced the camera, but apart from having been startled, she didn't seem to mind. "I had no idea they'd known each other that long," she thought. She guessed the photo had been used as a bookmark, then forgotten, and wondered if Azana might want it back. She'd have to check. Looking at it again, she rather hoped not. She'd like to keep it, if she could do so without coming across as all weird about it. She liked Azana too much, and valued their working relationship too highly, to want to risk that. Anne tucked the photo into the back of the book and sighed, turning to the first page of the introduction. "Don't overthink it," she told herself sternly, and began to read. Back on Air Temple Island, Korra's table felt a little empty at dinner, with most of the party gone. But Nima was back, her equanimity repaired by a night's sleep and a day's meditation, and they were a cheerful, if diminished, group as they ate and planned the next few days. After eating, when the Air Acolyte stewards cleared away the dishes, they set to working out which of their things they would need to retrieve from New Avalon in the next few days, and how they would arrange that. Corwin's parents wanted to visit anyway, in order to see their first, jointly and separately, grandchild, now that she wasn't being brought back to the big universe any time soon. Both he and Uchina confidently expected that they could be counted upon to bring most of the stuff that was wanted if they were provided with a proper list. Compiling that took an hour or so, after which, with the dining hall otherwise deserted and the staff lingering in the mode of restaurant personnel who want the last customers to leave so they can get on with cleaning up, they adjourned once more to Tenzin's sun parlor to continue plotting. "This is perfect," Korra declared. She stood at the side of the room that faced east, hands on hips, considering the windows and skylights, dark with evening now, but holding their promise of abundant sunshine during the lengthening days of spring. "I'll move my old drafting table from college in here tomorrow," she went on, turning a grin to Corwin. "Couple of stools, some lamps, a desk for the paperwork, everything we need to set up our own little design office." "Hey, nice," Corwin agreed. "With the mountains right over there for inspiration, and the doors open so we won't go into mole mode." "Yeah, exactly. People can come hang out. We'll take it easy, work at a nice steady pace, not get all hyper-focused about it." On the futon daybed, Anthy turned a little smile to Uchina, who rolled her eyes cheerfully. "Yeah, I see that happening," Uchina murmured, but Anthy only giggled softly and gestured toward the pair with her eyes. "It should have a tower," Corwin was saying, using the sketchpad app on his Omni-tool to draw a rough, glowing outline in the air. "I was thinking maybe more of a longhouse effect," Korra replied, reaching into the hollow field to draw another shape with her own fingertip. "With a tower," Corwin agreed, adding a child's cartoon tower to one end of it. And so on into the night.
A Reproductions Unlimited presented Undocumented Features Future Imperfect Symphony of the Sword No. 5 Suite for Trinity and Avatar, the Dito Suite. Third movement, Goodbye and Hello, as always. The Dito Suite will continue in the fourth movement, Taken by Storm.